Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Kelly Barner, Managing Director of Buyers Meeting Point, and the Director of Intelligence for Pollenbridge. Today, I would like to welcome Mark Biljan as my guest. Mark is a seasoned sales and procurement professional in the oil and gas industry, where he honed the skills and insights shared in his recently published book, Mastering High-Stakes Negotiations, Both Sides of the Table. Welcome, Mark, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you for having me.
And, of course, congratulations on the publication of your book. Would you like to start us off by providing a high-level overview for anyone who hasn't read it yet?
Yes, Kelly, absolutely. Thank you for that. After a relatively hectic, busy working, year last year, I was able to publish my first official commercial book early this year. The idea behind this book, came to me beginning of last year. Having said that, when I think through, at the end of the process, when I just thought through as to how long it actually really took me to kind of put this material together, I quickly realized that I actually was working on the material the year before. I worked on somewhere around, Kelly, 13 or so individual papers that really actually building the first 13 chapters of the book itself the year before. And the question is, why did I do that? I think there's several reasons for that, but I think fundamentally it comes down to, my overall desire to document things. So if you look back at some of my publications and so forth, you see this urge to document things. Wherever I went, I actually generated technical reports and theses and thesis and so forth. So the year before, I had these papers ready to go, and I think that was somewhere around mid of 2014 when I kind of had these. Mid of 2015 or so when I had these papers ready, and I had a small break, the rest of the year, until the beginning of last year, when in January I had this urge to write again, and when I put everything together, which basically brought up the first 13 pages of the book. So right from day one, I was at 60 pages, and the rest is almost like a history. I just simply went through the chapters and expanded them and added more information to it and so forth, and added some additional chapters as well. Midway, I decided to kind of expand the idea even further from just pure, information knowledge about, more high-level advanced negotiation dynamics into a little bit more on, pure procurement type of topics and terms and condition type of topics and so forth, resulting in additional chapters and or pretty much the target page number that that I was going after. And after that, it's nothing more than just a mechanical, going through multiple content edits and a copy and another content edit with my editor, resulting in a book that I could be comfortable to publish. And the rest was relatively easy after that.
Now, you mentioned procurement, and I think that is, in fact, what makes your book so relevant to this audience. The majority of the people in the buyer's meeting point audience are either in some kind of procurement or supply chain capacity. And we negotiate on a regular basis, but I don't think
Yes.
you would necessarily call all of what we do high-stakes negotiations. So starting with that as sort of the central idea of your book, how is it that you, in your mind, define what is a high-stakes negotiation versus, I don't know if you want to call it, conventional negotiation? I mean, is it a matter of spend?
Yes,
is it geography? Is it strategy? What is it that differentiates them?
Yes, Kelly. So I do have a chapter kind of touches on that a little bit, because I had the same debate myself, as I was writing these various chapters. When I kind of look through our lives, and many you know, negotiation books kind of going into the same philosophy as well. I mean, that's what I noticed. They kind of looked around and quickly realized, and I did the same thing. You know, we do negotiate a lot. You know, whether we like it or not, we do negotiate literally our entire lives. But in my opinion, you know, what matters is the stake and the time scale of the negotiations. So if we just talk about the stake, you know, in my opinion, you know, a high-stake negotiation, and I gave multiple examples of that throughout the book, you know, is a negotiation, and again, in the procurement sense, you know, at the end, I am in the procurement world for the last 10 years or so, half of it being on the selling side, the other half now on the buying side. So really, the context is around procurement, you know, the procurement world, buying and selling things. High-stake negotiations, in my opinion, you know, is a negotiation where you know, the stakes are so high that at the end of the day, if you are, say, the seller, you have to kind of sell that product in order to get the business going. It is crucial for the year-end dollars. It equates to actual jobs. And I was in that situation on the selling side. You know, some of my projects, the ones that I'm giving examples of, you know, these were must-win you know, must-win projects, multi-million dollars. I mean, we're talking about $40 million to $100 million projects, and they were must-win. You know, me losing that project, not me, of course, my team, you know, failing to win these projects was equating to jobs, you know, in the factory environment. So that, to me, is high stake. You know, another angle to that is, you know, high stake negotiation is really a negotiation where, you know, one's individual performance is also you know, determined and or judged, you know, at the end of the year. You know, if you're in the selling world, obviously, you know, there are some quotas technically that everyone expects you to meet from an organizational point of view, et cetera, et cetera. So that to me is high stake. You know, at the end of the day, if you don't meet those quotas, you know, it comes back with some impact, you know, potential, you know, negative review of someone's performance resulting in their maybe, you know, impact in their incomes. So something that, you know, really raises the stake high, raises the stake relatively high, depending on these various dynamics. And again, I also went into low-stake negotiations. I gave plenty of examples of that. You know, a simplistic one is, again, our daily negotiations. I mean, I was giving examples of negotiating, you know, with my daughter as far as the stuff that she wants to eat, or with my wife as far as, you know, which exit to take as we're driving the road and so forth. So those, to me, are really low-stake, quick negotiations. What is high-stake is, at the end of the day, if things doesn't work, there is an impact to the individual's performance or the company's performance. You know, someone will get impacted negatively, you know, with the result of the negotiation.
Now, it's interesting that you talk about sort of we all negotiate all of the time, even when it's not high stakes, because one of the things that I observed and found particularly interesting in reading the book is your emphasis on human habits and behavior. And one of the things that I had commented in my review of the book is that it's sort of a people watcher's guide to negotiation. If you're someone who's ever sat for a few minutes in the food court of a mall or a place where a lot of people are walking by on a boardwalk or something, right? And you're watching people. I mean, it's fascinating how it unfolds. And you address some of those things in the book. How much of a challenge would you say it is being in a negotiation and needing to both stay focused on your objectives and goals and your team, and also absorbing and responding to all of the sort of background noise of the human dynamics happening in the room?
Kelly, thank you. That's a very nice question, and you're absolutely right. I mean, you have literally understood the gist or the actual nature why I kind of wrote this book. And if I just, you know, come back to the beginning of your question, I mean, that's what I noticed kind of lacking a little bit, you know, in some of the books that are out there. They were going into all the various techniques and all the various basics and stuff like that. But I realized they were not going into, I mean, even though they were touching on human behaviors and physical behaviors and so forth, but, you know, I felt like it was kind of staying relatively at the, you know, high level. So I wanted to go deeper into that based on what I observed, and of course with examples so that I can support the ideas. So yes, it is challenging. You know, that's what I realized as I was going through this process myself. You know, I mean, there's always these techniques and processes and so forth that you follow, but you know, the whole process involves, you know, individuals, human beings that come into the equation with various dynamics. You know, they have their issues, their personal issues, and occasionally career types of dynamics, organizational dynamics that they bring into these conversations, these dynamics. That's what I, you know, realized as I was going through this process, as I was having these negotiations. And I'm giving plenty of examples of that in the book in various chapters, trying to, you know, kind of make a case for it that ultimately negotiation is, you know, is an art that one can read and obviously try to master it and try to learn various things from just the basic techniques point of view. But ultimately, it's deeper than that. You know, you can learn as many techniques as you want. If you don't understand, if you don't really kind of go through that process and go through practice it out there, you know, with failures and also successes at the end of the day, you know, one does not understand exactly what takes place. So the answer to your question, it is very challenging. It is very challenging, and especially, you know, in the negotiations that I've been around the world, you know, you can add also the cultural differences on top of that. You can add, you know, team dynamics with, again, individuals coming from, even in the same team, from different parts around the world. So imagine folks bringing those dynamics into the equation itself. I quickly realized that, you know, a good portion of the success, and I kind of mentioned that on a couple of things, a good portion of the success is really matters on how well, you know, a team functions internally. It's not about just individuals, you know, strengths and weaknesses, but it's more of how well team works together, you know, as a team kind of determines some of their success. And of course, I had plenty of, situations, plenty of dynamics that I found myself in dealing with these things. And I found myself having forced to deal with these things in order to reach the end goal. So it is challenging. And so the answer to your question is, and this is, I think, one of the key traits. I mean, I'm going through multiple traits of a, advanced, good negotiator in the book, the things that I believe are needed for someone to be a really good negotiator. And one of them is exactly that, you know, to be able to kind of, you know, read the room continuously, not just in the beginning, middle, or the end, but continuously reading the room, reading what's going on within your team members, you know, the dynamic that's going on within your team members, but also the dynamic on the other side. And of course, add that on top of that, the interactions between your team and the other team. So it's just, being able to, at least one has to be cognizant of that, okay? You know, someone has to kind of understand that. And then, of course, the next question is, what do you do? You know, what can you do as you're kind of reading all of these things? What kind of things you can apply as you observe certain things in order to smoothen out, the various dynamics as you're reaching the goal and trying to find solution to various areas and so forth. So, the answer to the question is in twofolds. One, you know, you kind of need to first understand that these dynamics will play. And then the second part is, by reading books such as the books I've written that basically tells you what kind of things takes place, you know, from an actual negotiator's point of view. And by the way, I have samples from other negotiators as well in this book, you know, around the world who have done these kind of things, are doing these kind of things, to basically give these examples out and kind of prepare you as to what's coming so that you have, you know, some tools in your arsenal to address these various things. Unfortunately, this is a field that, can be learned by, you know, listening to others. I mean, that's partially how I became an advanced negotiator, by having mentors teaching me these things and telling me what's coming and preparing me for these situations has been really, truly important in my development as well. And so in my mind, yes, you know, you read these things from others who've gone through, so at least you're ready. It doesn't shock you when you see these kind of things. And hopefully you have one or two, you know, things in your arsenal that will come to you quickly to alleviate the various dynamics.
Now, maybe an example of that, and something I have to say, this is probably the number one sort of visual that I came away from the book with, is you have a chapter that's basically dedicated to the power of silence, which is fascinating. This is probably the worst thing to say, but anyone who gets the book, my advice is jump ahead, read chapter 8 first. To me, that chapter, it was kind of everything. And then you can go back and take your time through the rest of it. But you talk about not just reading the room, but sort of working the room while the conversation is happening. And the visual that you use is you talk about topic float, and each side has the topic they want to spend more time on, they want to spend time on first, are the most important to them to get settled before moving on to others. If you would talk a little bit about what you meant by topics floating up and sinking back down in a negotiation.
Oh, yes.
And then I want to ask you a little bit more about silence. So start there if you would.
Absolutely. I mean, so thank you for that. I mean, that's certainly, I think, is an interesting chapter. And I do have, my stories around this particular topic. I mean, silence is a big topic. I mean, I've provided plenty of quotes in this chapter to kind of show how important this is, how important this has been throughout the history of humankind, you know, the silence, not just in negotiations, but in writing and communications and so forth. So to give you an idea, I think the perfect example I can give you, when this became really evident to me was, a negotiation, and I'm mentioning that in the book as well, and a negotiation I was having in Asia, let's say an Asian country without being too specific, I quickly realized that, you know, right from the start of the negotiations, the cultural dynamics in that particular country was demanding almost the buyer in this case, and keep in mind, I'm the seller at this point, so I'm trying to sell something and I have a buyer in front of me. It's forcing the buyer representatives from a cultural point of view to, get discounts, concessions on various things. So I quickly found myself, in a dynamic where, the buyer was putting literally me on the spot in front of, imagine, 15, 20, folks, consisting of, people from different levels of the organization. So there are people that are certainly at a higher level in the organization than I am. But it was interesting that this person, the seller, was really putting me on the spot as the manager of, of the proposal itself, to provide, concessions, discounts. Now, of course, unfortunately, in this particular situation, just like any other project, if you are a seller, you kind of know where your limitations are. You kind of know how much you can give away based on different dynamics, of course, to win the project. So I knew the limitations, of the current project. But interestingly, I was getting bombarded from a culture point of view, I quickly realized, to provide concessions. And this was coming in literally from the first moment of the meeting throughout the whole day. I mean, it continued during lunch, it continued during dinner, it continued literally throughout the whole day. But during the meeting, I quickly realized that, I was not going to be able to give the concession no matter what I've done at that point in time. So I realized that. And I had to make adjustments in my communication, because I remember initially starting verbalizing this to the other side, literally saying, "I apologize, I cannot give you any concessions," and so forth. But then I quickly realized that, this was really, it didn't mean anything to the buyer. The buyer was pretty much determined from their cultural point of view to continue asking the concession no matter what I was saying. So at that point, I had to make adjustments. And the adjustment I made is exactly that. I've decided just literally be silent, focus on something else when the question was coming to me, throughout the meeting. Now, this might sound a bit rude for someone saying, well, why were you not answering? Someone was asking you the question, why were you not answering? Well, if I answered, it would be going to be the same answer, and I didn't want to just basically go through the same thing. So what I've done, I just literally started focusing on my laptop or communicating with my colleague to a point where literally, the question would come into me and I would just simply talk to my colleague about literally something unrelated, which would result in this question. And that's what I mean by floating in the air. Like the request comes in and it starts floating in the air. And then I'm communicating with my colleague on some other topics. And we this is a tough thing to do, by the way. Because, everything in your body is forcing you to answer that question, to kind of give an answer. It's going to be the same answer, of course. It's, the answer is not changing. But I quickly realized by doing that, all I was doing was just, letting this question float in the air and dissipate. And I've done that throughout the negotiations in order to alleviate and respond to these requests. So that's a perfect example that really resulted in me kind of getting into this topic with some of these examples. But that's just one example. Again, this is a case where a concession is requested and you're being silent on that. There's all kinds of other, dynamics to that. It can be a concession. It can be some other things. It can be improved pricing. It can be improvements in deliveries and so forth. It does not matter. If a request such as, concession comes in, and if it's something that, that either the seller and the buyer is not willing to concess, one can apply that technique, the technique of simply, not answering the question, either focusing on other things or focusing on maybe answering a different question and so forth, and just letting that question dissipate and knowing that it might come back again and it might force, of course, the other side to kind of go through the same techniques and so forth. But again, once you master that technique, and I think I'm giving a couple of examples on how to do that, how to practice it with, one's colleagues in various situations, just to be used to this. It is a very, very difficult thing, though. When someone asks you a question, Kelly, and it's very, very tough, everything in your body
Absolutely.
Is forcing you to give an answer, and you really have to fight with that tremendously in order to, in order to continue having an advantageous position in the negotiations.
And so clearly this is something, as much as we talk about the fact that human beings as individuals negotiate all the time, procurement professionals are in a little bit more formal or commercial negotiations on a regular basis. I guess maybe
Yes.
my last question for you as someone who has focused professionally on negotiating is what recommendations would you have for a team or an individual or a company about when it's appropriate to do it themselves with due preparation, and when it really does make sense to engage with a professional negotiator, that is what someone does for a living. Any recommendations on that point?
Kelly, my quick recommendation for that would be, understanding, again, going back to the stake and the time scale. If the stakes are not, high, and in being in the procurement world, we constantly buy things. I constantly buy things and run initiatives, small, medium, large size initiatives. So if the stakes are high, my recommendation would be to make absolutely sure that, as an organization or as a company in general, my recommendation would be to locate and designate the most capable and advanced negotiators to be in charge to run that particular project. Now, having said that, I also recommend, on high-stake projects, certainly welcoming, other folks, maybe that does not have the types of experience of advanced negotiators have, to come in and listen, listen the dynamics and understanding what's going on throughout the interactions and so forth, just so that they can get that experience as well and they can kind of go through the battle experience, let's say it that way, for, high-stake negotiations. And the other thing is the time scale. Time scale is very important too in negotiations, and of course managing the time throughout the negotiations is also extremely important. So if the time scales are very, very short, for especially a high-stake negotiation, that one to me is pretty much given that one would need to have, the advanced capable negotiators, manage those projects. I have been involved in many projects where time scale has been crucial, and if buyer or seller does not manage that effectively, efficiently, one or the other will automatically find themselves in a high pressure, position where, buyer will have a clock ticking to order the equipment in order to have, the equipment in the field to support a particular project, or seller will be automatically finding themselves in a high pressure situation to sell, maybe before the year end in order to meet the financial dollars and so forth. So it's really important that, on high stake and short time scale type of, projects, the most advanced, capable negotiators manage. Anything that's relatively low scale and longer time scale durations, again, can be managed, let's say, a little bit more conventionally, you know, compared to the advanced method. So that would be the gauge, you know, in my mind for those conditions.
So for anyone that is interested in reading more about mastering high-stakes negotiations, I will share a link to my review of the book on today's Blog Talk Radio episode page so people can click through and connect with either Mark or connect about the book to get a copy. Mark, thank you so much for sharing your time and your insights today.
Kelly, thank you for having me. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
And thank you as well to everyone who has joined us for this BMP Radio podcast. Please feel free to share your comments and feedback on this conversation, as well as to share it with anyone from your network that you feel would benefit from the information. And please, as always, enjoy the rest of your day.